Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know, in the past, I've talked quite a bit about this team off the top, but not lately. They're just not worth it. They're boring. They're irrelevant. The Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys offense could not have been much worse in the last eight games of last season. They averaged 16 points per game. Dak Prescott, the next big thing, threw for less than a touchdown per game. He only went over 200 yards twice in the last eight games last season. So to put that another way, their offensive production in the second half of 2017 was lower than a crippled cricket's ass. Not my words. The words of Jerry Jones. Because I have no idea what that even means. Yeah, like I could even make something like that up. No, I got that from the owner himself. So, they know this. They went out in the offseason and they made a lot of changes. A number of coaches not named Jason Garrett and offensive coordinator Scott Linehan were canned. Dez Bryant, released. Jason Witten took a job in the booth. And the offense was supposed to be redesigned to better fit Dak Prescott. So knowing that, and the fact that Dallas would have Ezekiel Elliott to start the season, everybody was all hyped up to see the new-look Cowboys offense in week one. Until that new-look Cowboys offense actually took the field. And then nobody wanted to see it, any of it, because it was ugly. Seriously ugly. And not only were they not better than they were last season, they were arguably worse. Ugly. How ugly? Dak, 170 yards passing, no touchdowns, 6 sacks. Ezekiel Elliott, 15 carries, 69 yards, 1 touchdown. The offense as a whole was shut out for the first 51 minutes of that game. So that bad, that ugly. So exactly what the hell happened? Dak Prescott was the face of that franchise, the next legendary Cowboys quarterback. And now this guy routinely struggles to get over 200 yards passing. Ezekiel Elliott getting 15 carries for an entire game? I mean, that was, in a word, garbage.
Garbage.
Hot, steaming pile of garbage.
Steaming pile of garbage.
Garbage. Garbage. And worse than being bad is being boring. That's the greatest sin of all. There's no shame in losing, but there's a lot of shame in being boring. Especially if you have the ultimate look-at-me owner in Jerry Jones. Because the last thing that guy ever wants is for all of us to think, nothing to see here, keep moving. And that's exactly how things are with the Cowboys right now. They're not worth wasting our time on. Nothing to see here, keep moving. At least give me a train wreck that I can stop and rubberneck on. But they're not even that. They're just boring. Right now, they don't matter. They're irrelevant. They're boring. They're vanilla. They're not worth talking about. Not only are they a bad football team, they're the worst team content of all. Boring. Then again, that's just me. That's just me talking. What do I really know? I'll defer to somebody who does really know. Somebody who played there. Somebody who stacked Lombardis there. Troy Aikman. And Troy Aikman said during the broadcast that he was, quote, not seeing any creativity in the Cowboys offense. And he's right. And he couldn't have put that any more politely than he did right there. Notice how he said that. He's just not seeing any creativity in the offense. However, Steven, son of Jerry Jones, was not cool with that at all. The team VP was asked about Aikman's comments on a radio program, and I thought his response was pretty curious, pretty rich. He said, quote, this is Jerry Jones' son, quote, I just think at the end of the day, everybody can play armchair quarterback and point fingers after the fact. I do think we need to figure out how to get in a rhythm when you use 6 receivers and make sure everyone's in there for what they do best. I think that's a little bit of a work in progress, end quote. Whoa! Hold up now. Did Steven Jones just say that Troy Aikman was playing, quote, armchair quarterback? Did that really happen? Because if so, that is freaking rich. Because if that did happen, that's a legendary comment. Instantly legendary. Because Troy Aikman is not an armchair quarterback. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. A Hall of Fame quarterback that wore your uniform. Implying that Aikman is an armchair quarterback is so ridiculous. It's so dumb. that there isn't even a cliche or a trite phrase to apply to it. Like, that's not even the pot calling the kettle black, because in this case, the pot isn't even a pot. It's like a saucer, if that. I mean, I could spend an entire hour on how ridiculous it is for the guy who is the vice president of a team because his old man owns the team, implying that a Hall of Fame quarterback is an armchair quarterback. I could do an hour, I could do a whole show on that, but I won't because it's way too easy. It's too absurd. I mean, what's next? Stephen Jones throwing the he never played the game card at Roger Staubach? Maybe stab Emmett Smith in the back too? Furthermore, it's not like Troy Aikman is going way out of his lane to carve the Cowboys. He's a Cowboys legend. He's always represented that team with class and honor. He was a true professional as a player. He's a true professional as a broadcaster. And that means he's going to call it the way he sees it. And he sees a boring offense, a vanilla offense that can't move the ball, and an alleged star quarterback who looks like he's lost his mojo completely and is now just another guy under center. All true. Everything he said was true. All things he could have said but didn't, because he has too much class, because he rocked the star that's on the side of that helmet. He could have said so much more. I mean, exactly what the hell did the son of Jerry expect this guy to say? That the offense is fire? That it's cutting edge? That it's impossible to defend? I mean, come on. Then again, I guess it is creative to take a pair of Pro Bowlers and turn them into completely anonymous players. That is pretty creative. And it takes a lot of work. But somehow Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan were able to do that. But don't worry. Jay and Scott, they're on it. They've got big changes this week. Linehan is moving up to the booth instead of calling plays on the field. Garrett said it was, quote, just something that he felt like he wanted to do. He's done it before in his career. He's continuing to call the plays in just from a higher vantage point. End of quote. And then Garrett went on to say, quote, people will tell you when you're up above, you see the whole game better. You see all 22. When you're down on the field, maybe you have a better opportunity to connect individually with the players, but you don't have as good of a vision on the game when you're on the field as you do when you're up above, end quote. That's their solution. That's the thing that's going to turn it around. Yeah, that'll do it. That'll open up that offense. Now that Linehan is going up above, I'm going to predict a 300-yard game for Dak, 200 yards for Ezekiel, because nothing turns an offense around like an offensive coordinator changing where he sits. I'm sure that's going to fix everything and elicit an apology from Troy Aikman and yours truly. Moving from the sideline to the booth, or the booth to the sideline, is the second biggest kiss of death in the NFL. The only thing worse than an offensive coordinator changing where he sits is when the head coach gives the offensive coordinator a public endorsement. Oh, and Jason Garrett did that too. Quote, I have a tremendous amount of faith in Scott, end quote. Yeah, well, that makes one of you, Jason. And everything Aikman said was true. Pretty much anything that anybody says about the Cowboys right now is probably true. But look at the bright side. At least we're still talking to you, about you, to you. And with Jerry Jones, the ring isn't necessarily the thing, but us looking at him and talking about him is. And we are doing that, at least for now. Cowboy fan, don't sweat this. You've got nothing to worry about. Your offensive coordinator is changing seats. Latavius Murray is my guest. Latavius, great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. All right, so let me ask you about the opening game. You beat the 49ers 24-16, and the team found a way to win on both sides of the ball. As you look back on that game, what did you like most about it? What kind of thoughts do you have?
That we found a way to win. I think defensively, obviously, they played big time in the red zone, forcing a lot of turnovers. That way it was I think you're looking at a completely different game. But offensively, we did enough, but I think we can be a lot better, and I think we're going to need to be just going forward.
Latavius Murray, my guest. Offensively, it was the regular season debut for Kirk Cousins. So what do you make of what he's brought to the team and to the offense?
A lot of excitement, a lot of energy. I think obviously he has an arm on him. You've seen a few passes there to Diggs, especially to run the Rudy. You know, just a big-time playmaker, and So we're excited to obviously keep building off of that and the things that we did well the other night. And again, you know, we're just looking to just keep getting better, just keep getting better each week. And, you know, and I think the sky's the limit for this offense and the weapons that we have on offense.
Yeah, right. There is no better time to get started on MyBookie than right now. You've got the Ravens and the Bengals on Thursday Night Football. Wake Forest and Boston College start early tonight. You can make live in-game bets with MyBookie. Do you want to take it to the next level? Then you've got to get down. And no better place to get down than with MyBookie. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code Rome to activate that offer. A dollar for dollar match on your deposit? That is some serious ROI before you even hit the digital window. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code Rome when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. I mean, when you look at the talent that you have on the offense, when you look at how nasty that defense is, the Super Bowl buzz is already building. So how are you dealing with that? For instance, is it something you like to hear, or are you just shutting that out completely?
Shutting it out, because we know it's a long way until, you know, we get to that point. And so, you know, we know for us, we have to take care of, you know, week by week. And so we can't look no further than that. This is the NFL, and you know, it's hard to win games week in and week out. So we can't look no further. We can't look to the Super Bowl. We have to take care of business right now and, you know, just prepare each week for the opponent we have, and we'll see where that takes us.
And that opponent's Green Bay this week. Vikings running back Latavius Murray, my guest. Dalvin Cook and the other running backs refer to you as the big brother of the running backs room, and that you're the guy who leads them and shows them the ropes. What's that role mean to you, and how do you go about approaching it?
Yeah, it means a lot because – you know, when I came in as a rookie, I had guys older than me that, you know, took me under their wing and treated me the right way. Didn't treat me like I was a rookie. Didn't treat me as if they were too good because they had a lot of years and experience. They took me under their wing. And so I try to do the same thing for Dalvin and the other young running backs in the room. Give them advice, help them out, try and do what I can to make them a better pro. And that's on the field and off the field. And again, because I was treated that way, that's the only way I know how to go about it.
And I would imagine one of the guys you're talking about is Maurice Jones-Drew. He was like the big brother in your running backs room. So where did you learn about him or from him about being a professional running back?
Yeah, well, I think as you look at Maurice's career and obviously the things that he's doing right now, so I think he really set himself up for a life after football, and he was doing I think a talk show during his career, maybe at the end of his time in Jacksonville and then even in Oakland. So just connecting, networking, just doing more, doing what you can. You know, when you have that off day and when you're off the field, and then obviously the way he went about the game and his preparation, his knowledge about the game, he played so many years and he played it at a high level. And it showed in the meeting rooms. And so learning a lot from him there, technique and protections and things like that.
Latavius Murray joining us. So you've got the Packers on Sunday, as I mentioned. Every game is important, without question. But does it feel even bigger when it's the Vikings and the Packers?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a rivalry game. You're talking about Green Bay. You're talking about a division game in Green Bay. And, you know, at this point, at this moment, it doesn't get bigger than that for us. It is the next game, but it's, again, as I said, it's a division game. It's in Green Bay. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for us to, again, take it to the next level, see how we match up against their defense and, you know, and just test the character of our team in general.
And then are you expecting to see Aaron Rodgers on the field?
You know, he's done some good things. You know, he's talking about a future Hall of Famer and a competitor. at the highest level. And so I would expect him to find his way on the field. But again, we're preparing for whichever quarterback that they decide to play. And, I think we'll be ready to go either or.
Vikings running back Latavius Murray, my guest. You know, I saw you tweeting about your former Raiders teammate Khalil Mack on Sunday. What did you make of how things ended for him in Oakland and then that trade to Chicago?
You know, I think it was very surprising because, if I was being honest, when my time in Oakland, defense had a lot of ups and downs, and but one thing that remained constant was Khalil's play and, you know, the things that he did on defense. And I think it was easy for anybody to see that he was no doubt the best defensive player on that team, if not the best player on the team. So to see a guy like that walk out of an organization or get away is just was surprising to me. But again, when you look at it from the business side, because you have to, what Oakland received for Khalil and then what Khalil received financially from the Bears, you can say it's a win-win for them both at this point. So you can't ever ignore the business side of things because at the end of the day, that's what it is.
Latavius Murray joining us for a few more moments, having a really nice conversation right now. Listen, being in Chicago means that you're going to see him twice a year. So when you get the ball and you see him in the hole, how do you go about dealing with him? Do you try to throw a move or maybe you just try to run the guy over?
Well, you got to do whatever works out that
right.
specific play. I'm going to try to stay away from him, put it that way. I'm going to try to get away from him as much as I can. We'll try to put hats on him. You have to, because as you seen the other night, he's definitely a game wrecker. But we won't have to worry about Khalil, at least not for a few weeks. So we'll have to worry about what Green Bay does at this point and deal with Khalil when that time comes.
You know, before I let you go, I want to ask you about something that was unfortunately very, very sad over the summer when offensive line coach Tony Sperano passed away. You, of course, played for him in Oakland and again in Minnesota. He used to call you Honey Bear and Sugar Bear after your dyed hair. Are you able to really put into words what he meant to you as a player and as a person?
I mean, you really can't. It's hard because, I think everything is about relationships and the growth that Tony and I had, in Oakland, him taking over as the head coach and me becoming a starter while he was the head coach. And then it kind of started from there, my career in Oakland, to be honest. And then coming here as a free agent and Tony being the offensive line coach and the success we had last year. It's definitely hard to put in words, but he's impacted my career in a very, very positive way. And I'm appreciative that I got to spend, more than half my years with him that I've been in the NFL. Very, very thankful for that. So, again, we know what Tony will want this season. And so that's helped us, rest, and have ease knowing that he will want us to go out there and play this game at a high level and do whatever it takes to win. And so that's how we've been approaching this. And, hopefully we can remember him this season with a very happy ending.
Latavius Murray, my guest, final thought, and it keeps coming up when players talk about Sperano, is how much he cared about the guys and not just his players, but his men. For instance, you're working on an MBA from Syracuse. You went to Europe in the offseason. You're engaged to be married. You just had a son. I would imagine that he'd be thrilled for you about all those things. Let me quickly ask you about the MBA. You've already got so much on your plate. Why was it important for you to pursue an MBA and to do it right now? And what's that like?
Yeah, well, for one, the NFL gives us the opportunity to do so. And, they provide money for it if you want to go back to school. So I think that was the first thing. I remember reading a book, listening to an audio book, and they were saying, obviously, college tuition is very expensive, but when you have the opportunity to do it for free, like me, at full ride, going to UCF, and then now even going back to get a master's, and it's paid for, you'd be watching it. It would behoove you not to, ignore that. So, given that opportunity, I had to take advantage and it was a chance for me to grow and learn and, again, try to think about my time after football when I'm done and, see what other avenues it takes me.
Keep trying to get rid of you, but one last question. You mentioned UCF. You're one of the legends of UCF football. The program's coming off an undefeated season. They're 2-0 right now. How much pride do you take in the fact that you were one of the guys that played a huge role in building that program to what it is now?
Yeah, I take a lot of pride. It was one of the reasons why I went to UCF because of, I guess, where they were at that point and where they wanted to go in the direction that they were going. And I wanted to be a part of something great. And I remember, when we graduated and, each year, I think they kind of kept maybe getting better and better. They went to obviously a different conference that had a lot more competition and just that reminder of like, this was, a result of, my hard work and every other teammate that I played there with, the point that they're at right now. And obviously there was no better season last year than and the one they had, and hoping that they can repeat that this year, and I'll be watching every way. Regardless, that's definitely home.
So let's go to the Raiders for a minute. It's Thursday of week two. We're 72 hours removed from Oakland losing by 20 at home in John Gruden's return. So why don't we check in on the Raiders and see how things are going? The answer is not very well, not well at all. Speaking to reporters yesterday, Gruden described life at the facility, quote, short week, no sleep, and a wild skunk running around in our locker room. It's been a tough week. It's a smell I can't get out of my face, end quote. So what stinks worse, the skunk or the offensive game plan for the Rams? I'm not going to get into the symbolism too much, but having a skunk running around your locker room is not a great look on any level. And it is prime fodder for lame something stinks around the Raiders jokes. But seriously, folks, something does stink around the Raiders. And it's not the skunk. Because Amari Cooper, the receiver who Gruden declared would be a centerpiece of the offense, had one reception for 9 yards against the Rams. So that guy qualified about as much as a centerpiece in the opener as I did. So what happened? What happened? If this guy's your centerpiece, why did he only get one touch? Well, Gruden said, that's pretty simple. Chucky said, quote, you look at the film. We had him wide open deep. We didn't go there. He was open a couple of times, and for whatever reason, we didn't go that route. End quote. Listen, there's no cliche that gets thrown around more than throwing somebody under the bus, but that was one of the all-time great bus shoves. John Gruden is kicking it with his arm around Derek Carr's shoulders, like they were boys, chopping it up, hanging out, and then as soon as Gruden saw a bus, he pushed Carr as hard as he could right in front of that bus, and then he instructed the driver of the bus to back over him a few times and drag him for a mile or two. We're one game into Gruden's time there, and he's already blaming his quarterback publicly. The same quarterback that he said was one of the biggest reasons he took that job in the first place. And know this, if there's one thing that you know in a John Gruden offense, the plays are never wrong. If the plays don't work, it's on the players, not the coach. Now, that's not to say that Gruden isn't right. There may have been plays where Cooper was open, and the more intelligent play would have been to go to him instead of Jared Cook on an underneath route. But there are ways to say that without pointing the finger at your quarterback. And he chose not to go that route. Instead, this guy took a very obvious run at his quarterback, his $20 million a year quarterback that he allegedly was all in with. And not to state the obvious, but there's no way Derek Carr appreciates getting called out like that publicly by his coach. Nobody would. Just as there's no chance that Chucky really cares how his quarterback feels. And if throwing somebody under the bus is a tired cliche, so is the idea that John Gruden is tough on his quarterbacks and that tough love is what makes them better. Never mind that it doesn't always do that, but why would you bother creating an unnecessary controversy this early in the season? Why would you compound a 20-point loss with an unnecessary story? Just say, we didn't execute the way we would have liked and move on. Why? I mean, why would you do that? But then again, why would you trade Khalil Mack and butcher the explanations about that? Because that's Chucky doing what Chucky does. The Raiders haven't even played a road game yet, and they've already got a skunk in the locker room and a head coach pointing fingers at his Pro Bowl quarterback. But there is good news. And the good news is the Raiders may have solved their downfield woes because they signed Martavis Bryant to a one-year contract. And now Gruden's all fired up about the new guy. Quote, he's a guy that's proven.
Well, he's a guy that's proven. He can go up and get the deep ball in contested situations. He can run away from you. He can make you miss. He can make big plays down the field. That's an obvious.
Damn. Sounds like a great acquisition. Sounds exciting to get a talent like that after the regular season has already begun. Why is a guy like that available? What's the backstory? Where did they find him? Well, he was on their roster in camp, and they cut him. And why did they cut him? Because he underperformed. This is the same Chuck Gruden on Bryant a week and a half ago. Quote, we expected more from him. He did not make the team because Keon Hatcher came on. Some other players outperformed him. End quote. Yeah, whatever. He probably misspoke about Bryant. That happens. Let's check this quote out from before the start of the year. Quote, we try to keep the five or six best receivers, and that's what we did. End quote. And then there was the time where Gruden said he was tired of Bryant's absences and referred to him as, quote, a white tiger, because you do not see him very often. Oh, and one more thing, quote, Keon outperformed him, and for that reason, we're keeping Keon Hatcher, end quote. So, Gruden cuts Bryant, and Keon Hatcher was kept after a big performance in the final preseason game. Gruden then declared, quote, I probably would have been thrown out of the airplane if we did not keep Keon after that game. End quote. I read you all of those quotes. So fast forward a week and a half, and guess who's back? Bryant. And guess who was cut to make room for Bryant? Hatcher. And guess who's fired up about Bryant and his ability? The same guy who said he was disappointing, rarely seen, and totally outplayed by Hatcher. So unless there are two Martavis Bryants and two Keon Hatchers, things sure do change fast in Oakland. Trading your Hall of Fame defensive stud, losing by 20 in the opener, taking a run at your quarterback, trading Bryant, cutting Bryant, keeping Hatcher, cutting Hatcher, signing Bryant. I mean, things are not exactly going according to plan. In fact, I'm not even sure there is a plan. But if Chuck does have a plan, I'd love to hear it. Because I sure as hell don't see it. And things change fast there, don't they? So Bryant's back. And Chucky couldn't be happier to have him. Why? How? What changed? What changed? He couldn't break this guy off fast enough. He couldn't be more disappointed in this guy than he was. He said he was a white tiger. You know, something you never see. And now he's back? And he's the answer to their problems? Oh, and Derek Carr had a guy open downfield repeatedly, but didn't throw it to him. And Chuck has no idea why. Brandon Cooks. Brandon, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Good, good. Man, great to talk to you. Thanks so much. Now, you had 87 receiving yards, and you drew another 87 yards in PI penalties on Monday night. So let me start right there. How pleased were you with your regular season debut with the Rams?
You know, it was all right. It was one of those things, you know, just getting out there, being with a new team was great. Anytime you can come away with a win, you know, you walk off to feel happy about that, that's for sure.
All right, so from the outside, it seems like you and Jared Goff have gotten on the same page pretty quickly and were able to do so during the offseason program. So how would you describe that chemistry that you and he have right now, and how did it come together so fast?
You know, I think it's one of those things you just put in the work throughout the offseason, spending time together and throughout training camp. You know, we still got some work to, you know, continue to build together, but at the end of the day, we're heading in the right direction. That's what it's all about.
Rams wide receiver Brandon Cooks joining us. Hey, look, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but yeah, played with Drew Brees and Tom Brady, two of the best to ever do it. Do you see any similarities between the two of them and Jared Goff?
You know, Jared is just like the other two. He's his own quarterback, but at the end of the day, you know, he's working towards that greatness, and that's what both of those quarterbacks have. You know, he do it in his own way, and I love his style, and there's no question that he'll be up there.
There was a lot made about the fact that the offensive starters did not play in the preseason. So once you got out there, how did it feel? Was there any rust that you had to knock off? And what did it feel like when you finally did get out there?
You know, it felt great getting out there. It's one of those things, you know, we practice, you know, at such a great pace. You know, when it comes to game time, it's one of those things. Coach had such confidence in us not to have to play in the preseason and go straight out there and do what we did. You know, you got to take that. You know, that confidence that coach having us and have for ourselves.
Brandon, what about your coach, Sean McVay? There was this great story. This great story floating around this week that this guy literally can recall any play he's ever called. What's it been like to play for him so far?
I mean, this guy is he's an offensive mastermind. And, you know, you play for a guy like this and being with him throughout this season, this offseason, you know, you just get jacked up because the energy that he brings for this team is like another player. You know, he gets amped up just like us all. He's a guy that you just love to play for and that cares so much about the players, so much respect for him, and just, you know, you want to do your best because he puts it in just like we do.
So what's this guy like when you say he puts it in? Is he in the weight room with you guys? And is there kind of this fine line between you want to be a player's coach, you want to be one of the fellas, but you got to command that respect too. So how does he approach all those things?
No doubt. I mean, he's working out in the weight room, not necessarily with us. He got his own program going on, but don't get it wrong. He's getting after it. And as far as getting that respect, I think at the end of the day, you know, the way that he approaches the game, the way that he studies it, the way how long he stays here, you know, the players, we all see that. So he gets our respect right off the bat. So he has that player coach mentality, cares about us so much, but at the end of the day, we know when to lock in and when to go out there and play.
Rams wide receiver Brandon Cooks joining us. Now, during the OTAs, Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, who joined that secondary in the offseason, were blown away by the offense. They called it, quote, crazy, crazy unique. How would you describe the offense, and what's it been like picking it up as a wide receiver?
Yeah, I mean, it's a dynamic offense. You know, anyone can touch the ball. I think that's what makes it special. And as far as playing in here and picking it up, you know, it's one of the things you just study as much as you can to pick it up and get on the same page as everyone else, and I think it's been going well.
Hey, Brandon, where do you come out on that notion that the NFL is not like the NBA? You can't put together a dream team in the sense that you've got so many big-name guys that came in the offseason. What's it been like to join that team and be one of those big-name guys and then all the expectations that come along with it?
You know, at the end of the day, it's one of those things that, you know, you look around and see who we acquired throughout the offseason, you get excited just because you got guys that's been playing at a high level, you know, year in and year out, and then especially with the guys that have already been on this team. So it's really about the matter of fact of coming together, playing complimentary football, and just going out there and having that we, not me mentality that coach always talks about.
So what about that? Easier said than done, right? I mean, you've got some really big-name personalities. You've got some alphas. You've got some strong personalities. How would you describe the locker room right now?
It's an awesome locker room, no question about it. You know, we all get along. We have so many leaders, and I think that's the beautiful thing about this team. No one steps on each other's toes. We just know what our mindset is, and that's to go out there and get the win. And however we do that, you know, everything else will take care of itself.
Rams wide receiver Brandon Cooks joining us. You and I have spoken since you got into the league, but not since you've come back to California. As somebody from Stockton, what's it been like playing in Cali once again?
You know, it's a beautiful thing. Anytime you can come back to sunny California, you can get excited about that, let alone to be able to live here and play football here. You know, it brings back memories just playing as here now, just playing on the big stage. Family's closer. Everything else is just accessible. Mom can come to a lot more games and don't necessarily have to hop on a plane. So I think that's a beautiful thing.
You know, funny you mentioned mom. I was going to ask you about your mom because she suggested that a while back now, but she did suggest that you find something outside of football to help balance you out, that you're incredibly dedicated to your craft. So when mom said that maybe you should have some balance and find something else, what did you first think?
I mean, my thought process was, you know, where is she getting this from, first of all?
Right.
She knows how much.
Right.
But, you know, moms, as we all know, they got a feeling, and You know, most of the time when they suggest things is because out of the care for it. She was right, and at the end of the day, I took her advice, and I ran with it and just started to get into photography and kind of balance that life of football.
All right, so what about photography? We're not talking about you rolling out with an iPhone and taking pictures. I mean, you're all in. What is it about photography that you like?
I think it's one of those things. I love landscaping and, you know, just traveling around the world this off season, going to New Zealand, Sydney, and stuff like that, I think was, you know, a special moment to be able to pull out that camera and capture these moments that, you know, you really never dreamed of being able to do. And now that I get to do it, just want to be able to capture it. And, you know, like we said, have that balance between football and life, just to put my mindset on something else.
So is it something to take a little bit of the edge off, or is it something that actually makes you a better player? And if so, how?
I think it's a little bit of both, especially making me a better player. You know, not stressing out throughout the off season. You know, sometimes we can get carried away and put our mind exactly just on our job for 365, and that could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing depending on how you're doing it. So it's one of those things that just takes the edge off as well. Just get my mind thinking in a creative another way.
All right, so you got to get away, and you were able to get some time, as you mentioned, in Australia and New Zealand. I mean, that's like a trip of a lifetime. What was the experience like for you?
You can't. Words can't explain a place like that. I think when you see New Zealand, there's no question it's God's creation. You know, the mountains, just how everything was laid out. And then Sydney was awesome just because, you know, was able to see the Opera House. You know, I think that was the only reason I wanted to stop there, just to see that type of architectural design.
Good for you. All right, so last thought. You've got Arizona coming to town on Sunday, and when you look at the cards, you look at that secondary, you think P2, Patrick Peterson. What do you think about him, and what do you think about the secondary overall and the challenges they present?
You know, Pat P is a special player. You know, the guy's been playing at a high level since he's into the league, and there hasn't been no fall off. You know, the secondary is great as well. So, you know, we know we got a challenge ahead of us. We just got to do what we do, come in and practice. Going to the game and not overthinking and let everything take care of itself.
Rams out quickly. Brandon Cooks back here in California joining us. Brandon, great to have you on the program. Thanks for making time this morning. Always good to talk
to you,
man.
Always good talking to you.
Joe Kelly. Joe, it's great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Good afternoon. Well, good morning for you. Good afternoon for us. How are you, man?
Good, Joe. It's great to talk to you. I've been looking forward to it. Let me talk to you about a few things that were at the top. David Price went 7 innings last night. He allowed 3 hits in a 1-0 win over Toronto. He's now 5-0. He's got an ERA of just over 1.5 since the break. As one pitcher looking at another, what impresses you the most with the way he's pitching right now?
Man, the guy's a beast. He is. I mean, I've never seen somebody throw so many quality strikes. I mean, he's punching out guys looking left and right like I've never seen. You know, he's got to be up there probably along, you know, nationally and American League for called through strikes. And he's one of the best pitchers. You know, if you go back and look throughout his career in the second half of all of baseball, I remember before I got the boot to the bullpen, before I was a below average starter, you know, I had a great run in, I think, 2015, where I think I won like 10 games in a row, and then the only other pitcher to do even better was Price. And I'm like, man, this David Price guy just turns it on second half. He knows when, you know, when it's time to grind and when it's time to lock it in a little bit more. And to be on his team now and to watch him do it the way he goes about his business is even better. You know, he's had some, you know, tough times here. You know, people just expect so much, you know, from being one of the greatest left-handed pitchers to ever live. And he's turned on at the right time, and he's pinned us on his back and carried us to that victory last night.
We're talking to Joe Kelly. What a great answer that was. Below average starting pitcher. I want to get into that in a minute, but I want to reiterate again. You were an All-American and a first-team All-Big West player at UC Riverside, and you made that transition to the bullpen. In fact, you had a hold in Tuesday's win over Toronto, which was the 99th win of the season, and then you guys get win number 100. It's the first time, Joe, a Red Sox team has won 100 games since 1946. It's an incredible accomplishment. When did you first start thinking that this team could be something really special?
Yeah, I mean, like 100 wins, that's insane, man. Like, if you think about it, like the date you just threw out, there's probably, I mean, I don't know if there's anyone around the city or city of Boston who has ever even seen 100 wins. You know, you go look at that scoreboard out there, and it's the old manual scoreboard. You know, Tommy, the clubhouse guy here at the field, he's been working here for, you know, 40 years. he's like, man, this is going to be really, really weird. It's going to be the first time we see the number 100 in the win column, you know, up on that board, because he's never seen it. And, you know, that's something special, and that's something we take pride in. And, you know, I would say it's not the old cliche, but, I mean, the past 2 years we won 94 games. You know, we won the division. But with Cora coming in, you know, coming in this year to spring training, you just feel that vibe. You know, we had the same team. You know, we added an MVP caliber player, which is JD Martinez. You know, we got our pitchers back healthy. You know, we just added bits and pieces in the trade deadline. You know, it's one of those things coming to spring training, like, hey, if we just do what we did last year, we're going to win 93 games. So that at the back of my mind is at ease. You know, we have such a talented team, and then Cora comes in here and just makes us play even better, man. It's pretty crazy. You just throw so much faith in all his players, and that's hard to do as a manager or coach or a head coach. But when you're playing for, you know, the guy who has faith in you and confidence in you, it makes players play even better. For example, you know, opening day, I went out there and threw a stinker and blew Chris Sale's opening day start. You know, it's probably one of the worst outings of my career. You know, 2 days later, Craig threw the first two games, and Cora came up to me like, hey, if there's a chance to get a save tonight, you're our closer. And at that time, I had an infinity ERA because I couldn't even get one out on opening day. And 2 days later, Cora came back to me and threw me in there to get my first career save. And it's times like that where, you know, managers and coaches and head coaches, you know, when they exude that confidence in their players, you know, I think you just get even more out of them.
Boston Red Sox pitcher Joe Kelly holding it down here in the jungle and joining us. So, Joe, you come up with the Cards, and then you're dealt to the Red Sox, and you know, we all know, Boston can be a really, really tough place to play. It's not for everybody. What's it take then to not only play in Boston, but to pitch in Boston?
It either takes, you know, somebody super, super mentally tough, or, you know, somebody who's maybe a complete psycho. You know, it's different. You know, I had no idea. You know, my father is Irish. You know, my grandfather is Irish. He's big Red Sox fan, you know, growing up. And I've heard all about it. You know, my brother's a big Red Sox fan before I was even in pro ball. You know, and coming from the Cardinals is awesome. You know, as you know, it's one of the greatest sports towns for baseball. The fans, you know, eat, breathe, and just watch Cardinal baseball. You know, you could be the 26th man on that Cardinal roster, and you walk into a restaurant, they're buying you dinner because they know, you know, every single player.
Sure.
And getting traded over, I didn't know much except for that the Red Sox were not in a good place at the time, and they're in last place. So mentally, I was kind of upset because I knew I had a chance to pitch in the playoffs again that year with the Cardinals, and then getting traded over. But I had no idea how great of a baseball town I really was until, you know, I was actually playing here. You know, people were like, yeah, you know, media's tough, da da da. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, and then until I get, you know, to put on the Red Sox on my uniform and really get under that scrutiny, you know, it's kind of hard to tell other guys or other players. You know, it's great. The passion here is great. You know, deep down inside, I still think, you know, the city of Boston's a baseball town. You know, even though you got, you know, Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback ever, winning year in, year out, you know, Super Bowls, you got the Bruins, you know, making the playoffs every year. You got the Celtics, who are looking like a top three team in the NBA. I mean, there's so much winning going on in this town. And if, you know, the Red Sox lose, you know, it's like hell, you know, hell froze over. I still think it deep down inside it's a Red Sox town, which is awesome. You know, I wouldn't have it, you know, any other way. So, you know, you got to come to Boston, you got to strap it on, you got to play, you got to perform. And, you know, that's something that, you know, might hinder some guys. But, you know, with the guys we got in our clubhouse and I think that, you know, the front office does a great job in breeding personalities. I think we have a great mix of guys who can handle that pressure. So, you know, I think it's a great time to be a Boston Red Sox.
Boston Red Sox pitcher Joe Kelly, my guest. All right, Joe, we talked about St. Louis. We talked about Boston. You know I need to talk to you about Cali. You played your high school ball at Corona High School out here in California. What was life like for you in Corona?
Well, if I was a good kid, it would have been great. No, Corona was awesome, man. I was born in Anaheim, you know, moved out to Corona around, you know, age 10. So I was an Anaheim kid. All my family still lives in Anaheim, you know, my cousins and stuff. But growing up to Corona, you know, it's great to see. Corona's turning it around with sports. You know, you got Centennial Football out there who's, you know, I think top 10 in the country, and they're freaking public school. So that's pretty cool to see. You know, you got a great baseball program, Corona with San Diego Baseball. One of my was the first high school I went to. And then you got my alma mater, Corona High, you know, who's been to state, you know, twice in the past 5 years. And I think 4 years ago, you know, Corona High won state and for Division I baseball. So it's really cool to see, you know, not only there's great athletes in Orange County, but, you know, usually OC kids, I think the kids from the IU can't play, but, you know, we come out and we we strap it on and we play some hard-nosed sports out there. But like you said, Corona, as long as you get to stay away from that 91 and rush hour traffic, it's a great little spot to be in.
It's good advice, but it sounds like you're proudly repping the 909, though, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You know, finally getting an In-N-Out right off. I live in Rancho Cucamonga now, so finally getting an In-N-Out right off of my exit. I don't have to drive 4 miles down to the closest In-N-Out, so I'm pretty pumped about that.
I love it, man. The Kook is the best. Now, you went to UC Riverside, and you initially showed up as a freshman outfielder, but the head coach there, Doug Smith, and my man, the pitching coach, Andrew Checkitz, they see your arm. They want to make you a relief pitcher. What was your reaction, and what was that transition like?
I'll tell you what, the reaction was terrible. I was not very happy. Coach, it was funny. I mean, I don't know if you know the story, but, you know, one day...
Give it to us. Give it to us.
I was out in the outfield. I'll make it quick. And me being a goofball, I was catching fly balls early for BP, you know, young 18-year-old kid, and I was chucking the balls over the bubble from center field wall, over the bubble, and trying to just throw it over the guys to scare him. And our closer went down. His name's Adam Reffer. And long story short, I wasn't going to play. I was probably going to redshirt. You know, I was undersized, real skinny kid. And Checkitz came up to me and was like, "Hey, you ever pitch?" I was like, "You know, man, I pitched growing up my whole life. You know, when I was 12 years old, I got stress fracture. I don't want to pitch no more." He's like, "Well, we're gonna see what you got." So he gave me a ball. You know, I was still in my sneakers. You know, and went to the mound and I was like, "You just want me to throw a strike?" He's like, "Yeah." So, you know, wind up through it, came out pretty good. He goes, "Hold on, let me be right back." So Checkitz ran in and got the radar gun. He's like, "Do it again." First pitch he got was like 95. He's like, "Do it again." Next pitch, 96. And after that little short time, he goes, "Hey, man, you're going to hang up the bat, and we're going to work on pitching. So I think your hitting career is over." And I didn't have a fair shot because when I was hitting in fall ball at UC Riverside, I had to face pitchers like James Simmons, who was a first-rounder. You know, I had to face a pitcher like Mark Zepchinski, who's still in the big leagues right now. So they were sawing me off, making me look terrible at a .145. But, you know, pitching coach saw my arm, was like, "Hey, let's give it a whirl," and then started pitching from there.
Joe, that's an amazing story. And I love Checkitz. You know, I went to UC Santa Barbara, so I'm all about Checkitz and the program and how they're doing. I love that he was the guy that turned you around and made you a pitcher. But do you miss picking up the bat?
All the time. You know, I'm still hoping that, you know, I get my World Series at bat this year and you know, maybe a little mess up where, you know, it's an extra inning game and I got to go through innings. But, you know, I'm looking to get some redemption. You know, last time I hit, I think was off of Matt Latos, and I think I got a single off of Matt Latos, but I love hitting it. You know, I take a lot of pride in it. If we get a chance, you know, I'm going to ask Cora, "Hey, I'll keep going as long as you need me in the game, in the playoffs, and if we get to the World Series, and I want a little of that bat right there."
God, Cora's the best. I love him, too. I got to ask you, and Joe, I could do this for hours. I know you got stuff to do, but I got to ask you about the Big West. You were killing it in the Big West, even if that's not exactly the way you thought it would go. You were killing it. I am a Gaucho. What was life like for you playing college ball in the Big West?
The Big West is awesome. You know, and that was a big part of where I signed because my family still lives, like you said, in Corona. UC Riverside, you know, I get to play Irvine, I get to play Long Beach State, I get to play Fullerton. Those are all really, really short drives for my whole family. And the Big West is great. You know, the talent that comes out of there is very, very underrated. You know, you got Chris Davis with a K, you know, that played at Cal State Fullerton, took me deep, opposite field homer off the bench, blew a save in Cal State Fullerton, I think my junior year. And I was like, "Who is this guy?" And now you look at Chris Davis now, and he's got 41 jacks in the big leagues for Oakland. So, you know, there's talent everywhere. You got Peterson from Long Beach State. You know, you got Davinsky from, you know, Fullerton. I mean, you got Big West players throughout the big leagues everywhere. So I think, I mean, I would say it's a top three conference in baseball, you know, for Division I baseball.
Hey, Joe, right now, if anybody's watching us on CBS Sports Network, I'm looking into my computer screen because I'm actually texting with Checkitz right now, and he wants to know if you're still on. Is there anything I should tell him since I'm texting him as I'm talking to you?
Tell him one of my favorite things that Chex Mix has ever, we call him Chex Mix, Chex Mix has ever told me to do was, you know, when I first started pitching, we would do long talks on the soccer fields above the baseball field at the Plex in Riverside, and he would always want me to just, you know, get my arm stronger and throw it as far as I can. And I remember we were playing long toss, and I think it was Kevin Dickey was my catch partner, and he's like, "Hey, throw it over his head." I'm like, "You really want me to throw it over his head?" He's like, "Yeah, throw it as far as you can." And I was like, "All right." So I got the ball and just chucked it over my long toss partner's head. And my partner looked at me like, "What am I doing?" And he's like, see, those are the like, mechanics you need to translate. Like, that's like the perfect mechanics of right there for pitching. I'm like, oh, that's what you want me to do.
That's it. I see you working. He's technical like that, too. Joe, last story. You've got a million of them. But the last story, I just need to know whether or not this is true because it's legendary. On draft day, tell me if this is true. The story goes that you were 21.
Yep.
On the same day of the draft, there was a big party at OG's in Corona. Is that accurate so far? Like you were 21 and it was draft day at OG's?
That's 100% accurate so far.
Okay. So then that's a tough combination, right? 21 and draft day. Rumor is you might have gotten after it a little bit that same day. Is that accurate?
That's not a rumor. That's accurate for sure.
All right, so that's accurate. And then you get a phone call from the Angels, and that's the hometown team, and they said their pick is coming up. What would it take to sign you? Did you get that phone call, and then what did you tell them?
That was a phone call I got. The only thing I really remember, if for your listeners, letting them know, so I blacked out. Let's just be honest. You know, 21-year-old kid on draft day with some Jaeger, it's not the best combination to talk to scouts and GMs.
Incredible.
On draft day. I should have let my dad answer or somebody. So the phone call came, and they were like, hey, Joe, our pick's coming up in the second round, and like four or five picks or something. They're like, you know, what kind of money are you looking for? We'll take to sign you. And I threw out some random number, and I was like, it's going to be over $1 million. And back then, second round slot was, you know, maybe like $600,000, $750,000. And I was like, it's got to be over $1 million. And they're like, all right, cool. And they hung up, and, you know, next thing you know, pick comes up, no draft. And I didn't really realize that until, you know, the next day, puking my brains out. I was like, told my dad and told my girlfriend, who's my wife at the time, I was like, you remember that phone call I took? And I was like, it's the Angels. And I told him it meant like a money thing. They're like, yeah. I was like, well, I think I just screwed myself out of getting drafted by the Angels. And they're like, no way. I was like, yeah. Told him I wanted over $1 billion, which wasn't realistic at that point of the draft. And, you know, it all worked out being great. You know, the Cardinals drafted me and gave me a chance to play in the big leagues. I think being drunk on my 21st birthday for the draft was all meant to be. You know, if I was sober, I might have been an Angel. You never know.
Joe freaking Kelly, dude, I knew this would be good, Joe, but even for you, I didn't know it would be this good. You are a freaking revelation, man. That was an absolutely amazing interview. So good to have you on, Joe. Really good to wrap with you. We have to do this again soon. I mean, really
Let's
soon.
Let's do it again. Maybe we'll do it at Javier's.
Anytime, man. Javier's, whatever you want, dude. Your world, Joe. We can do it in the Kook. We can do it in Javier's. We can do it in Boston. Anytime you want. I'd love to have you back.
Awesome, Jimmy. Thank you.
Dude, OG's and Jaeger, we could do that.
As long as we don't have to watch a baseball draft during that time, we can watch a football game or something.
You got it, man. In the ABQ. Hey, Rex, what's up?
Hey, Romy. You know, I'm not a fan of the Raiders or their commitment to excrement, but these guys need to stop stepping on their own junk every chance they get. Now, I'm going to talk slowly to you, Raider fans, so you understand. You don't pay a quarterback $20 million per year after one good season. At least have them back it up with another before betting the franchise on them. Another thing that Al Davis's idiot son doesn't realize is that games are won on the lines. So if you have a guy like Khalil Mack who can rush the passer and stop the run, you place a blank check in front of him, politely ask him to fill out whatever amount he wants, then you sign it. Then you offer to cover his ATM surcharges. Lastly, there's no coach out there that can impact a game enough to justify $10 million a year. Last time I checked, Chucky wasn't under center or hand-checking Antonio Brown at the line of scrimmage. And, Romy, just finally, you say that Hawk is the ultimate cooler. I say it's Winston Churchill. Who yells out his name when they're hanging out with their friends? And I mean hanging out.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Rex, I thought that was the call you got racked. Here in Southern California, Jeff. Hey, Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Jimmo's. How are you?
Good, bud. How about you?
Good. Well, Jim, that's a wrap on the 2018 WNBA season. After 34 regular season games and a gut-wrenching playoff schedule, 9,134 fans saw the Seattle Storm take the crown last night in a three-game sweep of the Mystics. But I'm sure Hawk has been yapping about that Seattle dynasty all morning. The game was magical, Romy. ESPN.com said it best with the headline, "The Storm Surge Past the Mystics." Hey-o! Seattle was electric last night, I was waiting for Breonna Stewart to grab the mic and yell, "Seattle, this is for you." But do you even need a microphone when you're talking to 11 people? I'm sure this WNBA championship fills the void for the Seahawks losing that Super Bowl for the entire city of Seattle. With 30 points in the MVP award, Breonna Stewart, a.k.a. B-Stew, a.k.a. Monster Truck Face, was putting on a clinic out there, Romy. Layups after layups after layups. Just killing it. Just ragdolling everyone. I can't wait till next year. It's going to be amazing, and it only gets better as time goes on. War Subarus, I'm out.
There you go, Alvin. Better late than never.
You don't like that car.
I don't like that car. Not a very good car.
Jeff, you're a disgrace.
Good night now!